Welcome to The Monologue, a Mike Flanagan podcast where we take a thematic deep dive into the works of the filmmaker Mike Flanagan, featuring roundtable discussions, guest appearances, and an exploration of Mike Flanagan's signature tool, The Monologue. Welcome. My name is Cecilia. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kelsey and Riley. Say hello.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Hi, friends.
Thanks for being here. We missed you guys.
Did you guys miss me? Because I was absent from our last episode, and I listened to it yesterday, and oh my god, was I hungry when you guys were talking about those grilled cheese sandwiches.
And I was thinking about that episode yesterday because today had the exclusive of the menus for Horror Nights for this year. And I was like, oh my god, how perfect that we just did an episode talking about food. And then the menus for this year dropped. We did it. We made it happen.
Good timing.
I'm going to have to go look. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, was there anything good?
I mean, the things that I'm most excited about are for houses that are only in Orlando, not in Hollywood. So, like, some of our friends that are only going to the Hollywood one were, like, asking us about it. And it's like, well, I'm really excited for this, but it's only in Orlando. Like, so Orlando does, like, event icons. And so the event icon this year is El Artista. He has a name. But he's connected to his house is called this a Spanish Haunting. And so they're doing like a he's supposed to be a painter. So it's like churros with different dips and it looks like a paintbrush and a paint palette.
Churros. Very cool. Okay, so I like really that. Good. I've heard the churros are really good too, so.
Some of the things were really random, like the food item for Jason Universe, like Friday the 13th, is elote. And I was asking Eric, like, because I've only seen the first Friday the 13th. I haven't seen any of the other ones, which I will before I go. And okay. So I was asking Eric, like, have they done any that took place on, like, a farm or something? And he's like, no, like, so we don't know why they chose corn.
I don't think Jason is Mexican either, so this no. I don't really see a common thread.
I have some sort of memory that I don't know if it's just another movie of Jason being in a field. Like, maybe during Jason or Freddy versus Jason, maybe?
The only thing that's coming to my mind is that Texas Chainsaw remake of, like, Leatherface in the crop field. And but that was Leatherface, not Jason.
And the second Sinister movie, when they're, like, at that, towards the end, when they're trying to do the Anyway.
The best Sinister movie, might I add.
This is not Flaniverse related at all, so. Mm.
No, we have something better to talk about. As you can see on my shirt, I'm very excited for today's episode. We get to talk about my favorite Mike Flanagan show and my least favorite monologue.
How is it your least favorite monologue when it's your favorite show?
You know, I think I have very similar feelings to Riley. And
I will talk about it.
Okay, so we're doing the Moonflower monologue, which is from the sixth episode. What is it called? The Jolly Corner. So it's like Danny and Jamie's relationship and then also Henry, the uncle, and all that stuff going on.
I was very confused when I was looking back at the monologue today, like the first transcript that I saw of the monologue and they were like episode 6 and I was like, surely that's wrong because I only remember the like Henry Thomas, the uncle line from episode 6. I was like, surely this must be another episode, but no, it was not.
And that is one of my, first of all, main problems with the episode as a whole. It is my least favorite in this series. Because I don't think it connects anything clearly, because you've got Danny and Jamie kind of figuring out their stuff after they kissed and it was weird. You've got Flora with the dreams and memories stuff, which kind of connects to her seeing her mom with her uncle and not realizing that there's infidelity. which is somehow connected to now a dead lover, and it just never really ties up any of the threads. Like, all the pieces are there, but it doesn't work together. I don't think the writing or the episode structure is strong enough.
I think for me it's just a structure problem. I think that this being such a, like, standalone story for Henry almost the whole episode kind of takes away the impact of both Hannah's episode and then the Lady in the Lakes episode later, because they're structured very similarly, which makes sense once you learn more about both characters. I wish Henry's had been kind of paced out over even maybe two episodes.
Yeah. Well, and I wish the same thing for Jamie, because this monologue that she has is essentially an exposition dump at this point, because we haven't had a lot of time to get to know Jamie outside of her role, like, in everyone else's life. You don't get to see any part of Jamie, like, in the apartment above the pub that she talks about, or, like, any flashbacks from her. So it just seems very rushed, and it also is very dense.
There's just a lot of information in this monologue, to the point where, I mean, obviously I don't know anything about writing for TV or film or script writing or anything, but, like, if a student had submitted this as, like, a creative writing piece in, like, a class that I was teaching, my instinct would be, like, we gotta find ways to, like, show and not tell. Because it was a lot of just, like, this. And it's, like, surely you can get this message across by, like, kind of giving us more subtle hints instead of, like, mom did this, dad did this, mom did this, dad did this, coal miner, no plants underground, foster care, jail, plants. Like, it just felt
and like it's odd. Like, the way it's told is very cinematic, and, like, the language is beautiful, the delivery, because the language is also very, like, flowery, no pun intended. But the, like, very straightforward, like, matter-of-fact delivery that Amelia Eve gives, I think, balances it out perfectly. So I do think that it's not boring in any kind of way, but it is, like, this is television, it's visual, you need to show these things, not just make me sit and watch Victoria Pedretti react to it for 7 minutes. Like, there could have been something.
I think the thing is, it's because whereas longer monologues work in something, like, this seems like proto Midnight Mass to me. Where I think when the story, you have a lot of the similar kind of way people are speaking, I feel like it just doesn't really fit in this piece. Whereas I think, like, a monologue like this would work really well in Midnight Mass.
And, like, so, when I went back and looked at the monologue today and, like, read it word for word, the part that stuck out to me when I – so I've seen the show all the way through twice, and the part of this monologue that stuck out to me the most during those watchings was the part when towards, like, the very end of the monologue, when she talks about, like, the mortality of the moonflower is what makes it beautiful. The whole, her whole backstory, like, with her family and stuff, I didn't even realize that was in there until today, like, my third time hearing it. So that just kind of, my brain just kind of just skipped over that.
And I don't think it necessarily has to all be taken out, but I think it could be simplified. But I understand, like, when you look at the monologue is very much giving us symbolism between Danny and the Lady in the Lake, the difference between the moonflower and the coal. So the dead thing that's been pressed, crushed for so long that it sets on fire.
And it is, like, important, because, I mean, by the final episode, like, no spoilers, but Jamie and Danny are the ones that we're focusing on. So we needed to know about Jamie's backstory, because up until that point, she's kind of an enigma still. So I get why it's included. And I don't think, Like, it's definitely not wrong to include it. And, like, Amelia Eve does a very good job with it. I just, I feel like it could have been maybe, I don't know, just from the perspective of a viewer, like, that whole biographical section wasn't that memorable.
It's just a little too self-indulgent. Like, it just needs to be just trimmed up a little bit, I think. I think everything that's in it is good.
Yeah.
But the, it's like Riley said, it's a little too flowery.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if Jamie hadn't been so blunt and, like, bordering on abrasive at some points in the earlier episodes, then I don't think it would be as jarring. And they do try to kind of tether it. Like, there's a couple of lines where she's like, call a spade, mom's a whore. But it's like, oh, this doesn't feel like fun, jokey Jamie anymore. This feels a little off-putting. So there's just... I think the focus, too, with, like, are we talking about childhood? Are we talking about comparing relationships? Like, what is the point of this?
I think the point is to explain where Jamie is at emotionally and her past and what she's gone through, to make it even stronger of her telling Danny that, like, a lot of people have let me down in my life. I don't put a lot of effort into people because I don't trust them, but you're someone that I want to put effort into. And so that's what I think the main conceit of the monologue is.
And it does stay, like, even the way that it's, like, very quick and kind of run together, like, that kind of does, that does stay true to the character, because, like, already up until that point in the series, like, we definitely get the vibe that, like, Jamie is not very into the whole emotional, like touchy-feely kind of, like, you know, like, she wouldn't be someone, I think, that would be comfortable talking about their emotions. So that does kind of make sense that it comes out just kind of like bum, 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 just kind of all out at once, because she probably would just want to, like, get it out to, like, get her message to Danny and not dwell on it.
Yeah, I do think that's a good... Oh, yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I honestly forgot what I was going to say at this point. Oh, wait.
That it's a good point that the nervousness would make you kind of be like, let me just give you all my trauma and then we can decide what we want to do. My question is, so when this role was originally written, it was written for a man, but was later changed to a female. Mm-hmm. Do you think this monologue was different before then? If it's the same, how do you think this monologue would have came off with a man kind of delivering this?
Because so I think originally,
it coming from a female perspective softens it.
It does. I feel like the whole, like mom's a whore and stuff like that, like, if it had come from a male,
that probably would have changed. That was probably different.
Well,
yeah, I feel like that would not have played well with a male character.
So Oliver Jackson Cohen was the one who was originally supposed to be in that role, but then it was like, oh, they played the twins on Hill House. That might be kind of weird.
Yeah.
Now I'm imagining him doing it, but he already plays Peter Quint, who is the worst piece of garbage in any media. And imagining him doing this monologue makes it so much more sinister. I hate it now that you've said that.
I mean, I don't think he would have been playing the role of Jamie as
it would have been a Peter.
No. I'm sure it would have been endearing, but, like, imagining that, it just creates such, like, a fight or flight feeling in me. I'm like, get away from him.
That's crazy. I forgot that he was supposed to that was why they changed the role. And I'm not one that's usually just like, they play siblings in a movie, no big deal. But I think it was a good choice.
They played twins and it was a whole thing. I feel like people would have noticed and be like, huh, that's a little weird.
Flanagan likes incest.
I mean, yeah.
They gave him such a hard time about the animal deaths. We don't need that, too.
Yeah, I think that would have been a weird little thing. And also, like, the fact that they had Victoria have blonde hair as Danny, because, like, with the brown hair, they thought it'd be too close to Nell. And so then Amelia Eve had to dye her hair because she's normally blonde. So
oh, they had to do like Spoxies.
Yeah, had y'all not heard that?
That makes I had not heard it, but it makes sense.
No, I knew that there's a show that I watched a couple episodes on that Amelia Eve and Carla Gugino were both in. And she's blonde in that. I wish I could remember what the show was, because it was very interesting, but very weird.
I remember being so confused, like, so when Blind Manor came out, most people, we were still in, like, COVID lockdown, and so there was, like, this, like, virtual convention or something that, like, or virtual Comic-Con or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I remember this.
Was one of the, like, people for that, and I remember being so confused, like, seeing people's, like, Zoom pictures, because I'm like, wait, she's blonde? And then I, like, looked and was like, oh, she, like, normally is. Like, she's not normally brunette. It was just, and then I, like, saw, like, years later, I saw that thing about, like, the, that they thought that Danny would be too close to Nell, and so they had to make some changes, like, to their appearance.
I mean, I'm not gonna complain about it. My girlfriend is also a woman with gigantic blonde hair, so
gigantic hair.
She's Dolly Parton.
That's my type. She's yep, just gigantic hair and gigantic unnaturals.
I was, when you started that sentence, I thought it was gonna go a very different way, so I'm glad that it ended with hair.
Uh-huh. Oh man, what else is there to say?
Anyways, we were very hard on this monologue, but
yeah,
I do really like Bly.
Oh yeah, no, it's my favorite show. I do think, like, and it's not even, it's just I wish there were more time. Like, if there were one more episode that we could have just Moonflower. Fleshed Jamie out a little more. I have a question.
Oh, okay.
So, speaking of my girlfriend, we've been rewatching, or I've been rewatching, she's been watching Bly for the first time, and we got to episode 4, where the, you know, Danny and Jamie, it's kind of clear that it's like, ooh, they like each other. And by this point, my girlfriend's like, wait, I haven't picked up on any of this. They have had no chemistry. What do you guys think? Because I think the exact opposite.
I feel like it's very blatant.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I remember the big thing being like, oh, Mike Flanagan's got a queer bait us, isn't he? And then they're like,
never.
Oh, no, it's real.
He's never once.
One thing that I would like to point out, so I've seen the whole series all the way through twice. The first time was like when it came out and I like binged it. And then the second time, I was watching it with my fiance for his first time. And we, like, pretty much binged the first 8 episodes. Is it 8 or 9 episodes?
9.
It's, yeah. So we binged, like, the first 8. I think we watched those over a weekend. But then, like, we took a little break because I needed to emotionally prepare myself for the last episode. And then life happened, and so we didn't go back to the last episode for, like, probably, like, a month or two, and the last episode does not quite hit as much when you've had that much of a time gap in between. I feel like it hits more when you've binged it or watched it close together, because when you've had too much time in between, it doesn't, the full weight of it does. I don't know, that's how I felt. Maybe it was also because it was like the second time that I was seeing it, so like I knew what to expect, but yeah. I like the first time I was like devastated.
Oh, yeah. Sobbed. Uncontrollably sobbed.
I think the last several series that have come out, I have made a tradition of taking a selfie of myself by the end of the last episode, and Bly might be the one where my face is just the most red and drenched in tears, so...
Yeah.
But I don't know, because I haven't seen the last episode in quite a while now, so I wonder what would happen if I tonight just decided to skip ahead without any of the...
You're eventually going to get there, so, like, you'll get to see a reaction now, this, like, new time that you're watching it.
Yeah, that's true. We have been slacking. We've got over half of the series... But we're on episode 5, so now I'm already waiting to be devastated by that.
5 is, I feel like with pretty much any Mike Flanagan series, episode 5 is like devastating.
Yeah, at this point, I'm just anticipating it with anything that comes out.
Because episode five of Hill House was Nell's story.
That neck lady. And then
Episode five is Hannah's story.
Hannah's episode.
And then episode five of Midnight Mass. Episode five of Midnight Mass. And then episode five of Fall of House of Usher, I think, is the Telltale Heart one.
Okay, so for that one, it was my personal, like, oh my god, this is horrifying. But when I had talked to Jamie Flanagan about it, they had said, like, yeah, we waited until episode, or was that for Midnight Club? That it was, they waited till episode seven for it to be, like,
I think Midnight Club.
I think, yeah, it must have been, we were talking about Midnight Club. So they have been kind of mixing it up a little bit. Keep us on our toes.
There's also one devastating middle episode.
Yeah, you need it. It's like a roller coaster. You know what? There is something that I would like us to speculate about, because there's a part that really only gets mentioned once, and then we maybe make a couple of subtle comments. What do we think Jamie was doing hard time for?
Theft. Burglary.
Okay. All right.
Burglary or something with probably, like, drugs? Because my thought is if, like, she was put in the foster care system as a very young teen, she probably didn't get a good education, and she comes out, she doesn't have any family, she doesn't have any means, she barely has any schooling. How does she make money?
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's not really good answers.
That's why I think it could be that
good answers,
because she's trying to make money, or like kind of steal to make ends meet. That's what I kind of in my mind had always thought. It was like something like that. Like, I don't think it was like murder or anything.
What do we think a good reason would be?
I mean, I've seen Orange is the New Black.
CEO.
She killed one of the creepy foster dads that was being a weirdo, hopefully.
Mr. Smiley.
Oh, well, the timeline wouldn't add up, but I love it anyway. Kill that motherfucker.
I mean, that guy has a dad. That character has a dad. Maybe it's
what? Could be.
I mean, I kind of, my, like, headcanon, I guess, is what you would call it. I don't know. Like, it kind of makes me think of, like, Aladdin, how, like, he was, like, stealing food to, like, survive on. So I wonder if she was, like, stealing essentials or something and got caught.
That's I mean, I feel like more than likely that, or, like, in most cases when women end up incarcerated, it's because of a man. So there could have been someone, you know, making her sell drugs or whatever. I think that's such an interesting part of Jamie's character, too, that it doesn't really get mentioned, because clearly, like, she's very trustworthy. These people have, you know, left her with their kids, basically have become part of their family, and it's never brought up as something negative. So I think, because I had seen a lot of discourse on the internet at the time about that, and like, oh, of course the, you know, lesbian goes to prison to find gardening, and I'm like, why? What's the problem there? That sounds like a good thing.
I don't think they necessarily are related.
Yeah, I don't understand either. I'm like, these all, like, it, that could be someone's real life. It doesn't seem unrealistic, or that you're, like, condemning any of that.
It also seems to just be based around her trauma as well, because her whole Moonflower speech is just like, people are messy and awful, and they can do you wrong. Plants are pretty simple, and as long as you give them, like, sunshine and water, they won't leave you and disappear out of your life.
I mean, that's the same theory for, like, why people have pets and plants, I guess, and the whole, the, like, Gen Z little treat culture. Like, the Sunny Angel was, like, literally created for lonely women to give them something to look after. Did you not know the Sunny Angel?
What is this?
It was, like, the precursor to, it was, like, the thing that people were going crazy about before Labubus. It's, like, this little figurine. I don't find them that cute, but it's like a little baby, and then it has different things on its head, like different little hats. And the creator said that he wanted to create some little trinket that like women could like attach to their handbags or put on their work desk or something if they were lonely.
But it's called a Tamagotchi. We had them in the 90s. Why are they just reinventing these things?
I don't like this at all.
Lagoons are creepy as fuck, by the way.
These are creepier. So there's apparently Sunny Angel has a snack series now. And just to give you a flavor.
Oh, they're naked.
Yeah.
Why?
Why would
I? I mean, I guess I'm not a young woman, but why would anyone want them?
What? They were, like, really popular. Like, they were, like, Labubu status, like, selling out everywhere, like, a couple years ago.
Do you think maybe next traumatized character, they'll find meaning in, like, selling Labubu dolls?
Okay. This is something new they have coming out, and I kind of like it.
I've seen
those around. They're like little stick figures.
Yeah, they're like, called plush Schmitzky.
Oh, is that what they're called?
Schmitzky plush keychain coming soon. $25. Do I need one?
No.
Allegedly, there's like a new Labubu series coming out. I got like an email from Pop Mart about it, but then when I went to the app, all I could see was that they're doing like another like Big Into Energy release. So I don't think that there's a new one. I don't know. They're cute. Like I've seen a couple students with them on their backpacks, but I'm just like, that's a lot of money for me to spend right now on something that I don't know what I'm getting. So.
Also, I've never, sorry for the tangent, the Pop Mart web, like, app is one of the most broken apps I've ever used in my life. It's awful. It's garbage.
I do like that they have the countdown for you. Like, it'll say, like, August 23rd at, like, 21, like, o'clock, so, like, 9 p.m., like, there's gonna be a launch, and you can put it in your cart and then try to check out.
Why so is it military never... time? It sounds so serious.
Well, it's international. I feel like other countries use military time. I feel like the U.S. is probably the only one that doesn't. Just like we're the only ones that use like feet and inches instead of like the metric system.
We're wrong about that one, but the time one I think we're right about. No, we are, because I can't figure out the other kind.
No, but the military time is helpful because like... How many times have you had a conversation where you're like, oh yeah, like I'm free at 6 and you have to be like 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. But military
I would never
time,
tell you I'm you free don't. At 6 a.m.
or 10. Like I'm free at 10. I'm like a.m.?
P.m.? No, never. I'm in bed. I've been asleep for hours.
9. Like 9 a.m. But the point is that there is bound to be some time where you're confused about, like, what time do you mean? But military time, like, makes it clear.
Yeah. Also,
I just hate change.
If you're flying internationally, it's so much better to see military time because then you know for sure, like, okay, that is when my plane is leaving.
Yeah. And
that's fair. I've never been anywhere. Yeah. So, yeah, that might be helpful.
But yeah, anyways, I don't know how we got on this topic.
All that to say, I think the juxtaposition between Jamie finding meaning in the plants and earth and dirt compared to her dad living inside of the earth where everything was dead in the coal mines is very nice. Could have tied together a little better though.
Modern day version where Jamie's dad is a Labubu reseller.
Oh, and what does she find passion in?
Going outside and touching grass.
Yes. Oh, we need more of that.
My last thought is that I know I already kind of talked about this, but the whole idea, this speech, the end of it, reminds me a lot of what will become Aaron's monologue in Midnight Mass, where it's just like life recycles and like, you know, you might die, but you go to feed something else and that blooms. And like, just because the flower blooms and the bud dies doesn't mean that it wasn't beautiful and that you won't remember what it left behind. And just leave the plant behind, at least for a little bit.
I'm really curious about how much, like, I thought the same thing when I was reading this. I'm curious about how much of this was, like, a trial run for Midnight Mass, because I, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Mike has said that when he made Hill House and it was such a success, that like Midnight Mass was like tied into that, like, oh, I get, if I make this for you, I get to make this. And Bly came after Hill House had already been successful. So it was like a known thing that Midnight Mass was going to happen or attempted to happen. And so I kind of do wonder if this monologue was like kind of working through how things might go for Aaron's monologue.
I think the writer's room is pretty consistent as well. So just in terms of like the way that these lines are going to read and the people that are writing them and the ideas that are being shared, I think, yeah, it could be considered a precursor to it.
And I imagine if like Mike had been working on the scripts for Midnight Mass for a while, there's a good chance that like you're writing something else, but part of like what you want to write kind of seeps into the current thing you're writing.
And a lot of things in the Flannerverse kind of deal with the concept of mortality. Like Hill House does, Bly Manor does. Midnight Club, even though that was based on source material, and like The Life of Chuck was based on source material, but it's important to those as well.
Yeah, they all kind of rhyme with each other.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, should I get a moonflower tattoo? I still want to get a tattoo.
You guys want to get Bly tattoos? No, we can't.
But no, why we can't. Why would you get a moonflower tattoo if, like, wait, was Riley, were you the one that was like, this is my least favorite monologue from the show?
Why would you? Yeah, but it's my most favorite relationship. I love these girls.
I don't think it's necessarily what the monologue is saying. It's just for how long, like, it's 7 minutes
long. It's dense.
Yeah, it does make some very, very great points, and I mean, we've already talked through all of that, but yeah.
I'm sad because, like, if I were still in high school at this point, like, I'd have so much good material for speech and debate monologues, thanks to Mike Flanagan.
Wow.
Like, this
would have
made such a good speech.
In the high school speech and debate club, you could do, like, a Drew Barrymore Never Been Kissed kind of thing.
Good. I'll tell my brother Josh that he also needs to come and pretend to be a high schooler and make the
baseball
team. Doesn't
he, like, work at the... Isn't he the janitor? They might notice that he's not doing his job.
Just gonna put on a backwards baseball cap? They'll never know.
One thing that I do really point out about this monologue before we completely move away from it. So today, I was looking on YouTube to see if I could find the monologue without having to open Netflix and go to that episode. And I was not successful in that, but I did come across like probably at least a dozen, if not more, people doing their own readings or own interpretations of this monologue. So this clearly is very popular with Bly Manor fans.
Okay. Me mum was Sue. Me dad was Ray. Me mum was a grocer. Me dad smoked crack. That was my Moonflower monologue. Did you guys like
more,
it?
More! More! Encore!
I don't have it.
That sounded like Australian.
That wasn't... I don't do accents usually.
I mean, I can't do accents at all, so I could not have done it any better. Yeah, it just either. Like sounded like if you told me that you were like going for Australian, I think that would be like amazing.
That's great.
Thank you.
Built-in Australian accent. You have to nurture it.
You know, that's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to practice my monologue. I'm going to learn my lines because I don't think that was quite it.
Not quite. Not a grocer. A coal miner and I don't know.
Yeah, I'll have to study up a little more.
I think that's any last thoughts on the Moonflower monologue?
No.
I think we about fully exhausted that one.
I do too. Yeah, this was a nice little rant that we got to do. We don't get to do that very often.
Yes. Well, rant makes it sound negative. We did find a lot of positive.
I think that it would be bad if all we said was very positive things.
And it's I'm not a yes man, more of an observation
of, you know, Mike evolving as an artist.
Yes. We gotta learn from our mistakes.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening or watching. We will catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.